When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
On the cold afternoon of Sunday, December 11, 1994, in Livonia, Michigan, 4-year-old DeJuan Sims was reported missing. DeJuan was accompanied by his mom on an afternoon outing at a local mall to do some shopping, but that outing turned grim when he just seemingly vanished. No trace of him was ever found. It even brought into question as if he was ever there. Law enforcement performed a heavy search in the mall and surrounding areas. Little DeJuan did receive coverage, but it just didn't produce any positive or negative outcome. In fact, it left the community of Livonia in mystery and decades of uncertainty. An innocent child, gone, just vanished. Like I always say, we know someone just doesn't vanish. When you look at the facts of the case, it makes you question everything. It makes you question the moments after DeJuan was reported missing, but it also makes you question what happened before to explain the oddities on the surveillance footage. You will soon see that it is true that 4-year-old DeJuan Sims was missing, and still is, but you will also see that there is something missing. Something is off. There is a missing piece of the puzzle, or possibly a gap in the investigation. Not everything is always what it may seem. Someone knows something, and that someone, our most vital subject, most likely has the answer. But there's a possibility, as dark as this may sound, that it was taken to the grave. We're going to look at the facts of the case, retrace the timeline of what we know, look at the case details, break down every element to piece together this 30-year mystery, explore the one possibility, and close with my opinion. This is the Missing Found Podcast. I'm your host, Jaden Harlow. Before we get into the case, I have a few details to share about the show. The Missing Found is an investigative true crime podcast focusing mainly on unsolved missing person cases in the Black community. The cases that I cover have either gone cold, have little to no media coverage, or have gone without conclusion. You can follow the show on Instagram at The Missing Found or on Medium at The Missing Found to read our original script. I also would like to mention that we have a case suggestion form in the show notes or description box that you can complete to submit your case suggestions that are of the Black and missing. We have a Patreon that's now available for you to become a member in our private community to discuss cases deeper beyond our case analyses through private discussions with me, ad-free episodes, early releases, and much more that's exclusive for members only. The show is now available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. For Apple Podcasts, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating to help the show reach a broader audience to help find our missing. To access all things of The Missing Found, you can visit our website, themissingfound.com. I ask that you please like, share, comment your thoughts on this case, and subscribe if you found value and want to continue the journey with me to finding our missing and learning about their stories. This is Case Episode 24. The disappearance of DeJuan Sims. Nostalgia for a moment. How many times have you went to the mall with your parents or any adult? I have some of my most cherished memories at the mall. From taking pictures with Santa and telling him that I want that 1995 Barbie dream house with the elevator. Getting a Cinnabon or a pretzel with extra butter that aromatized the entire food court. And shopping at Hex for school clothes. We can't forget in the early 90s when Identikit was popularized when we went to the mall to get our fingerprints taken. Going to the mall was a nostalgic experience that many of us experienced in the 90s. It was the place to be on a Saturday afternoon after your Saturday morning cartoons, just to finish the night off with Blockbuster and Hollywood Video for your PlayStation or a new VHS tape to watch. Oh, the nostalgia of it. But then there's another side. Though the mall was such an experience, there was always a darker undertone. Something hidden in the underlayment of the neon lights and tile flooring. When you think about these cases like the ones, you remember the most popularized cases of mall kidnappings, like the 1975 case with the two sisters, Catherine and Sheila Lyons, who were ages 12 and 10. Both sisters were abducted from Wheaton Plaza, now called Westfield Wheaton in Wheaton, Maryland, which still remains unsolved today. You also think about the 1981 case of 6-year-old Adam Walsh, the son of America's Most Wanted, John Walsh, who was abducted while playing a display video game at a Sears in Hollywood, Florida, and was later found dismembered, with only a portion of his body ever being recovered, still to this day. Mall abductions are just not really common, but they can and will happen if you're negligent on situational awareness or just at the wrong place at the wrong time. I can give you several cases that involve children, teens, and adults with abductions and incidents at the mall. Though they are not common, they still are daunting. In this analysis, you can't help but not remember the 1994 case of DeJuan Sims, who was reported as being abducted from the Wonderland Mall. So who was DeJuan? DeJuan Christian Sims was born on Monday, October 29th in 1990 to his mother, DeJuana Harris, and his father, who has not been publicly named, and he was born in Michigan. There aren't much details about DeJuan and his upbringing since he was only 4 when he went missing. We do know, just as any 4-year-old, he loved watching television, specifically the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers show, according to the Charlie Project. DeJuan lived with both his mother, DeJuana, and her boyfriend, later turned spouse, Victor Jackson, in an apartment building on the west side of Detroit. Now, on to the case details. The only way to understand this case is to understand what happened before DeJuan was reported missing. From here, we will discuss the series of events and the reported timeline. This is the timeline that DeJuana provided in her initial report. So let's start from the day before. On Saturday, December 10th, 1994. DeJuana, who was 25 years old at the time, and Victor had plans for a night out that evening. DeJuana started her preparation and self-care by starting with getting her hair done at the salon. She went to the hair salon and brought 4-year-old DeJuan with her. Prior to them going to the salon, she stopped at a fast food restaurant to get him some lunch. Because of the plans that evening, DeJuana arranged for DeJuan to sleep over at a family friend's home. The Great Debate, Sunday, December 11th, 1994. On the next day, DeJuana picked DeJuan up from the family friend's home sometime after 10 a.m. From there, DeJuana claimed that they went to the laundromat to wash clothes. She explained that she had a total of 5 loads of laundry to wash. At this time, while at the laundromat, DeJuan was said to have been present with his mother. After doing laundry, DeJuana mentioned that she drove to her mother, Beverly Harris's home, then back to her apartment on the west side of Detroit. Once she returned home, she found that Victor was sleeping and didn't want to bother him or wake him with having to babysit DeJuan. Instead, she stated that she took DeJuan with her to the Wonderland Mall so she can do some shopping. DeJuana said that she arrived to the mall at around 1:45 p.m., parked her vehicle, then both her and DeJuan entered through Target. She had planned to do some shopping at the Target, but she quickly noticed that it was too crowded. Assuming she walked through Target and entered into the actual mall, DeJuana said that DeJuan stood and paused outside of a toy store and asked her if he can go into the store to look at the Power Ranger action figures, but she didn't allow him to. Dawana recalls walking past a perfume store, but shortly after, she noticed that Dewan was not by her side anymore. Once she noticed that Dewan was out of her sight, she claimed to have performed her own search around the mall to locate him, but was sadly unsuccessful. This self-performed search was ongoing for nearly 2 hours until she alerted a mall security guard. The report was said to have been made around 4 p.m. The mall security team took immediate action to try to locate Dewan. In conjunction with the Livonia Police Department, they searched the mall, checked areas that were off limits to patrons. They checked inside stores, but nothing ever materialized from the search. Lastly, witness testimonies and surveillance footage was checked, and there was an interesting finding, a nearly groundbreaking discovery, and I will get into that in a second. From the witness statements, neither witness recalls seeing Dawana at all between 12 p.m. and 3 p.m. In fact, when she did arrive to the mall, they don't recall seeing Dawana with her. She was alone. Even witnesses who saw her drive and park at the mall, they reported not seeing Dewan with her. That isn't the only thing. Now, surveillance footage had shown Dewan entered into the Wonderland Mall sometime after 3:30 p.m., which completely discredits her original report of her and Dewan arriving at 1:45 p.m., and the hours that she claimed to have searched the mall on her own for her son after realizing he was missing. It gets better. When she walked into the mall sometime after 3:30 p.m., surveillance footage shows her immediately walking over to a security guard to report Dewan missing. What this means is that there was no stopping at a toy store to look at an action figure. There was no elaborate self-orchestrated search to find her son. And with that, there is high probability that Dewan was never with her at the mall, let alone in the vehicle when she arrived at the mall. Contrary to the testimony that Dawana initially gave that he was with her, the security footage proves otherwise. Dawana was brought into intense questioning. Her apartment was searched, which turned up nothing, and she was given 2 polygraph tests and failed both. Dawana's father was also given a polygraph test, and he passed. She claims her reason for failing both tests is due to the situation of her son going missing and her just being upset, which can impact the test. Former Livonia Police Chief Robert Stevenson, a member of the department's surveillance unit at the time, claimed that Dawana was seemingly close to giving a confession, but would end up walking out before giving it. It leaves you to question, if he wasn't at the mall or walked into the mall with his mother, then where was Dewan Sims on Sunday, December 11, 1994? This would mean Dawana lied, based on surveillance footage. It also leaves you to question, why would she lie? She went out of her way to create this elaborate story just for it to be untrue. There has to be something there. The details of the case in here, but then there were the search efforts. After scouring surveillance footage, conducting a top-to-bottom search of the mall, bringing in K-9 units, a ground search of the mall, speaking to witnesses, and even speaking with Dawana during her interrogation, nothing ever materialized of Dewan. After the search, which lasted for 3 days, it then transitioned to other areas like the apartment building in which they lived, in its vicinity. The Livonia Police Department spoke with family members, and they all gave an account in support of Dewana, and nothing pointed to her being an unfit mother. In fact, there was no history of any abuse regarding Dewan, and family members said how she was a loving mother. There were hundreds of calls that came in with leads and sightings, but they all led to a dead end. As a result, the investigation grew massive with 40 investigators from Livonia and Detroit police departments, Michigan State Police, and even the FBI became involved in the investigation. Missing person flyers were printed and handed out by Dewana and her family, offering a $5,000 reward for his safe return. As you can imagine, the missing person case of Dewan went cold, and Dewana was said to have no longer communicated with investigators. However, she refuted that claim and mentioned that she was cooperative and remained in contact with the PD throughout the years, which turned to decades. In 2015, Beverly, Dewan's grandmother, and Dewana's mother spoke out and stated that she believes Dewan is still alive and that she does not believe that her daughter had anything to do with her grandson's disappearance. Just a few years later, a possible break in the case surfaces. A hopeful discovery. In 2019, a young man named Mike Cash, who was 33 at the time, came forward to investigators because he believed that he was missing DeJuan Sims. He came to this ideation because he recounted how his cousins had told him that he resembled the missing child, and he found out that his mother was dishonest about who his father was. According to the Detroit News, Mike also mentioned that his cousins informed him that his mother was never pregnant. So this and the other claims could contribute to one's speculation of who they are. His claims are unconfirmed on whether or not that statement is true, or any of the cousins' claims, but it is something to keep in mind. DeJuana felt that he was not her son. In fact, according to Mike, he said that DeJuana blocked him after he reached out to her for a DNA test. DNA samples were given to Livonia PD of Mr. Mike Cash. Lab results came back, and there was no match between him and missing DeJuan Sims or his family, mentioned by Livonia Police Captain Tom Gorowski. This, as you can imagine, did not help the case, but it may have brought closure to Mike with the thought of him possibly being DeJuan. The resemblance in their baby photos is uncanny, so I can see how he felt or believed he may be DeJuan. I do hope that Mike is doing well and is able to find answers for himself. By this time, DeJuana already had two other children, married and living in a different state, which was North Carolina. Sadly, DeJuana never received the news of the DNA results because she passed away on December 7, 2020. The details surrounding her death were never made public. There's a possibility that the truth died. On Monday, December 7, 2020, DeJuana Harris, who has since married and renamed to DeJuana Wiggins, had relocated to North Carolina. A mother of two children and was a trustee at her church, had passed away in her Durham, North Carolina residence. She never had the opportunity to find out about the DNA results of Mr. Mike Cash. As many would say, the truth died with Mom. They say that because it is largely believed that she was involved somehow in the disappearance of her son, or have more information that she was leading on. Her death came only 4 days before the 26th year anniversary of DeJuan going missing back in 94. Investigator Stevenson said, quote, "She was our last hope of solving this case. I think we've given up hope now," end quote. Stevenson also mentioned that every year around the anniversary of DeJuan going missing, they would have her tailed to see if she visits a potential burial site or a location that would lead to missing DeJuan, all of which apparently turned up nothing. At the time of her transition, the case was still open and ongoing, and even still today. Without any new leads, no findings, no trace, things are still cold and DeJuana maintained her innocence, as she was still considered a person of interest in the case. The case breakdown. This case is a dead end, but it doesn't have to be. I say that because we really don't have much to go off of. The facts are the facts, and even the facts were not enough to bring some form of justice to DeJuan. We know the series of events based on DeJuan's recounts, whether true or falsified, that all of which led to this seemingly sophisticated lie, but somewhere in between lies the truth. Maybe. Let's look a little deeper, starting from the top, because I have some pressing thoughts on potential holes in the case and some discoveries that just aren't talked about. The usual errands and process of elimination. Let's begin from the day before, Saturday, December 10, 1994. As I've already stated, DeJuana and her boyfriend Victor had plans for what we can assume was a date night. While on her way to get her hair done earlier that day, she stopped at a fast food restaurant to pick up some lunch for DeJuan, who she claims was actually with her. After getting him some lunch, they went to the hair salon together. From there, she either went back to her apartment first or she left from the salon to drop DeJuan off at a family friend's home to watch him while she and Victor enjoy their night out. I want to pause right there for a moment. This all sounds harmless, right? What we don't have is if these stops were ever confirmed in the full scope of what that day was like. I can make an educated guess that law enforcement did their due diligence and confirmed that both she and DeJuan were at these locations. The fast food restaurant, the hair salon, he was in fact dropped off at a friend's home, and where Dewan and Victor spent their night out. One would assume that this had to be looked into. I don't know if she had a hair appointment or if this was a spur-of-the-moment decision. Probably not important, but it is something to give the case depth on understanding her routine or routine for that day. Of course, if she did not have an appointment, she may have had to wait some time to be seen since she would be considered a walk-in. This element would not hold much weight because if Dewan did end up at the family friend's home, then we know he did make it there. We just don't know what were the smaller details in between that occurred on that day. I want to know every move that Dewana made on December 10th. Every move. I want to know if she encountered someone. We don't know who was at the friend's home or anything about the friend, as it has not been stated publicly. If law enforcement did look into this, we can assume that everything was successful, checked out, and Dewan did sleep over at the friend's home and he did walk out safe and alive on the next day, Sunday, December 11th. Things get odd when you look at the errands made after he was picked up. As I've stated, Dewana had picked up Dewan from the family friend's home sometime after 10 a.m. Then they went to the laundromat. With that, we can assume that Dewana at some point did go home or was already home to pick up their laundry to transport it with her to pick up Dewan, then head to the laundromat. The actual location of the laundromat I could not locate, but Dewan was said to have been with her. I cannot confirm or verify if this stop at the laundromat was confirmed to have been with both Dewana and Dewan. She claims that he was with her, but I don't have a formal statement released to confirm if Livonia PD was able to verify this or if the laundromat had surveillance cameras to verify. Remember, this was 94. Surveillance cameras were in existence, of course, but there were also some stores that did not have them yet. After the laundromat, the next stop was at her mother Beverly's home. Beverly lived on the 6,000 block of Fielding Street in Detroit. They stopped at her home. This is another element that we don't know what the stop was for, how long, why she made the stop, and if the stop was actually made. I know what some of you are thinking. Why can't she visit her mother's home? Well, when you have a case like this that is of a missing child, everything requires truth verification. The reason for the stop has to be looked into to see if the stop was actually made and true, or if it was not. If the stop was true, what was done in this stop? Could there have been a confession in panic or just a stop by to say hello? I hope you see where I'm going with this. Again, those pertinent details. Did Dewana get out of the car? Did Dewan get out of the car? Or did Beverly walk to their car? Did they both go inside to Beverly's home? Dewana then heads back home, assumingly to drop off the laundry and Dewan. Dewana, from what I can see, she lived at Skygate Apartments on the 6500 block of Yale Street in Westland, Michigan, which is around a 30-minute drive from her mother's home. I want to also state that I was going back and forth on this address. The years are a little odd in my research, but it is believed that to be her residence around the time Dewan went missing. Dewana claimed to have initially wanted Victor to watch Dewan so she can go to Wonderland Mall to do some shopping, but he was asleep. Let's pause there. This is another element where it's based on one's personal behavior, and I will get to that in a second. You have to remember that Dewana picked up Dewan from the family friend's home sometime after 10 a.m., so though we don't have a definitive time, we can assume it was sometime within that hour. They went to the laundromat, which could have been about a two-hour trip or longer since she said she had five loads of laundry. Keep in mind, this is on a Sunday morning, supposedly, so it may have been a little crowded. Someone would have had to see both Dewana and Dewan. Remember, we're just trying to fill in the gaps of when something could have transpired, and our timeline is based off of Dewana's accounts, which I cannot confirm if they are true recollection of series of events or if it was altered. A lie. A typical cycle for a washer at a laundromat can vary between 20 to 40 minutes based on the cycle type and load size. Coupled with five washing machines going at one time since she had five loads. After washing the five loads, she would have had to transition to drying the clothes or items. Drying time could vary because she could have used less machines or had a smaller or larger load per dryer. This drying time can vary between 20 to 60 minutes. You have to also consider if she had different machines running at different times, and also account for the folding time. This laundromat trip could have easily taken 2 or more hours. The visit to her mom's home is not given a span of time, but we can assume that she ended up going home sometime in the afternoon, possibly mid-afternoon. It also makes you question, how close was this laundromat to the friend's home? Typically, when someone washes clothes at a laundromat, they typically go to a laundromat in their vicinity. Her mother lived 30 minutes from where she lived, and that is quite the distance to drive. This is why I question the lack of details regarding the visit to her mother's home, for how long and why. We don't know how far the friend lived from Dawana. You also question, why couldn't Beverly watch Dawan? These are just questions, right? Now, human behavior. Why would Victor be asleep at this hour? Sure, I've taken afternoon naps quite often, and I'm sure you have too, but I can't tell if this is her being truthful or if there is something else there. It just seems convenient for him to be asleep, which in a sense relieves him from the responsibility of having to babysit Dawan while Dawana goes shopping, or any possible involvement of having anything to do with his disappearance. Almost like he is off the hook because he was asleep. Almost counting him out. I want you to also keep in mind that this could very well be true, that he was in fact asleep. We don't know where they went on date night and exactly when the night ended for them. Was he actually asleep or was Dawana covering something? Like I've said, it almost eliminates his possibility of involvement because he was asleep, leaving it on Dawana. The sophisticated lie. But why? Once she left home, she claimed she had gone to the mall and that's where he went missing. However, we find that to be untrue. Based on surveillance footage, she actually entered the mall sometime after 3:30 p.m. and walked over to the mall security guard to report that her son went missing in the mall. If Dawan was picked up sometime after 10 a.m. and she walked into the mall on or a little after 3:30 p.m., that left her with a 5-hour window. I ask you this question. Could she have done all of that in 5 hours? Could she have picked up Dawan, went to the laundromat to wash and dry her 5 loads of laundry, assuming that she did utilize the dryer machines, take a visit to her mom's home, who's 30 minutes from her home, and go back home with the presumption that Victor would babysit Dawan, which did not happen since he was asleep. Then, drive to the mall, which would have been around a 20-minute drive from her home at Skygate Apartments in Westland. We know she did not walk into the mall with Dawan. In fact, he was said to have not been seen in the car with her at all. She even lied and said that she and Dawan walked into the mall sometime at 1:45 p.m., which would have given her an even shorter window of time to pick Dawan up, do 5 loads of laundry, stop past her mother's home, then go back home, then drive to the mall. That would have given her around 3 hours, possibly. When I think about her washing clothes, it does make you wonder, was she hiding something within the clothes? This story seemed to have been concocted in a way that was thought out, but done so sloppily. When I make that statement, I'm referring to the timing at the mall. She claimed she arrived at the mall nearly 2 hours before she actually arrived, and claimed to have been looking for him, but clearly she was not based on surveillance footage. What this tells me is that she would have gone to any length to create a story. If Dawana was dishonest about them both walking into the mall together, the time they arrived to the mall, then what is it to also be dishonest about being at the laundromat and going to her mother's home? This is why when you tell one lie, you have to tell another to keep it going. Rest on that for a moment. You can assume that the mall was crowded since it was only 2 weeks away from Christmas Day. Many people were shopping for gifts, doing some last-minute shopping, and just out at the mall to take advantage of the holiday sales. This would have been a perfect setting to stage a disappearance or a kidnapping because of it being crowded. Keep in mind, this was in 94. Online shopping was not a thing. You either shopped from a catalog where you would call into the company to place an order, or go in store to shop. Online transactions were so new that in August 1994, Pizza Hut made its first online transaction of a pepperoni and cheese pizza in e-commerce. So that just gives you an idea of how new online shopping and e-commerce was at that time. You can imagine how busy the mall may have been. This is why I believe it was thought out quickly, but done so sloppily. Not only was it done so sloppily, but it seemed last minute. This still does not pinpoint exactly when something could have happened to Dewan, but it does offer context in the time frame, since this assumed alleged lie was so carelessly articulated, since the time of the reporting was proven to be untrue, and the fact that the missing child was not even where she claimed he was at the site of the reporting and location of the possible abduction. I would like to know more about the laundry. Were the clothing ever checked? And what was the stop at mom's house about? Did she really even go to her mother's home, or was she elsewhere? If she never did stop at Beverly's home, then that would mean Beverly would be covering or lying for her, because this detail is public. And if it were unverified or untrue, Beverly would have come forward to say that her daughter, Dewana, did not stop past her home, you would think. The life insurance policy. There was a life insurance policy taken out for Dewan. The policy was opened by his grandmother, Beverly. I was able to pull some archives from a newspaper that was printed from December 16, 1994, only 5 days after Dewan went missing. Beverly stated that she opened a cash life insurance policy sometime before he went missing. She stated that she did not remember when she opened the policy, nor if it were for $25,000 or $50,000.
The boy's grandmother confirmed she went to Detroit Fire headquarters this afternoon to get paperwork related to the life insurance policy because of police questions about it.
That's the problem. I can't remember. It was either 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago. But they did not deduct
it. Was it last week?
No, it wasn't last week. It was not last week. It was like either 1st of December or end of November. It was after Thanksgiving, but it was not last week.
Did the police ask you to go get that, or did you just decide
to? No, I volunteered to go get it because it kept coming up, and I'm the one that took the policy out. My daughter did not even know about the policy until they started asking questions, and she said, "Mommy, do you have a policy? Because you had mentioned something about getting policies." And I said, "Yes, I did take the policy on me and Dewan."
So did they ask you about it?
Who?
The police, did they ask you about the policy?
No, I don't know who. See, it kept coming up, so I volunteered the information to them to let them know that I'm the one that took the policy out.
But you've discussed it with them?
Yes, I have.
Beverly Harris says the police haven't asked her to take a lie detector test about the case. She says she's willing to do so if they want her to. In Northwest Detroit.
The payments were being deducted from her job as a Detroit fire inspector. Beverly also stated that Dewana did not know about the policy because she figured it was, quote, no big deal. I want you to remember this. She also went on to mention that she planned on taking a policy out for Dewana and her other daughter, which is Dewana's sister. I have an issue with this policy. I say that because, sure, it could be an honest action with nothing behind it, or something else, like a lie, in part. Moreover, did something happen to Dewan whereas they were involved, and the goal was to take out the policy to claim it? We've seen this before in cases. I say this because it actually isn't atypical for a parent, grandparent, or a legal guardian to take out a life insurance policy on an infant or a young child. In fact, most of you listening or watching may have had one or have one on you starting from birth. I want to get off the subject for a brief moment and say this. It is a responsible thing to do and have. And if you don't have a policy on yourself or your child, I strongly encourage you to get one. There are several resources out there to learn about life insurance and find the best one for you when you transition to cover your homegoing and final expenses, debts, and leave something for your family if you choose. The policy that Beverly may have taken out for Dewan was the Gerber Life Insurance Policy, where you can buy a $25,000 policy and it builds cash value as you make payments to your monthly premium. This is an assumption. However, Dewana would have had to have known about the policy because Beverly, as the grandparent, would have needed to acquire Dewan's social security number to apply for the life insurance policy. Your social security number is not something everyone in your family should know or be able to access, so it does not seem hard to imagine that Beverly, at some point, had to ask Dewana for his social security number to obtain a policy on him. Beverly saying Dewana did not know because she felt it was no big deal does not seem quite truthful. Why couldn't DeWanna take out a policy on her son? Granted, she may not have known the value of life insurance and its importance. Maybe she didn't have the money to do so. But this does seem a little off. She had to have known there was a policy on her son taken out by her mother, his grandmother. Whether she was telling the truth or not, I'm unsure if she stated that DeWanna did not know to potentially conceal the fact that people may suggest or allude to DeWanna harmed DeWan or know more than what she has communicated so that she can obtain the death benefit, which she would have had to produce a death certificate in order to acquire the benefit. Or if she really did not know and somehow Beverly was able to acquire the Social Security number on her own. Beverly did not remember when she took out the policy. This is yet another oddity because DeWan was only 4 and actually just turned 4 since he had a birthday only 2 months before he went missing in December. Within those 4 short years of his life, prior to him going missing, Beverly, when did you take out the policy? It just does not make sense. If Beverly wasn't being truthful about that, then what else could she possibly have not been truthful about? This is not to say that she was not telling the truth, but based on the aforementioned, it really makes you question it. It also makes you question DeWanna stopping at Beverly's home that day. It makes you question the life insurance policy. And it makes you wonder why DeWanna falsified her story of DeWan going missing at Wonderland Mall when he was never even there. The polygraph test. It was stated that DeWanna was given 2 polygraph tests. However, she failed both. In the state of Michigan, polygraph tests are not admissible in court. Her reasoning for failing the test is due to the stress of the circumstance, her losing her son. Her failing the test could mean something, but then you have to wonder which questions were asked and if the tests were administered correctly. I can say, however, her failing the 2 tests are very concerning to me because she did not fail not just one, but both tests. Law enforcement claimed to have never believed her story, but simply did not have enough to charge and convict her for the disappearance. This speaks volumes because they felt and realized the possible inconsistencies, but really could not legally pursue her. Domestic assault in 96. I was able to pull another archived article that was printed on August 7, 1996. Around this time, DeWanna's name changed from DeWanna Harris to DeWanna Jackson. She ended up marrying Victor Jackson. I don't want to confuse you because when DeWanna passed away, she was DeWanna Wiggins, meaning she remarried after her marriage with Victor. On Sunday, August 4th, 1996, DeWanna got into an argument with Victor at their home in Skygate Apartments. The argument was about Victor taking his daughter from a previous relationship out shopping, but did not take their 5-month-old daughter along for the shopping trip. The argument turned into assault because she threatened Victor with 2 kitchen knives. He called 911 at 11:12 p.m. Police came and arrested DeWanna and she pled guilty. DeWanna was facing a 90-day jail sentence and a $500 fine for the misdemeanor. On Tuesday, August 6, she posted $1,000 of the $10,000 bail that was set by Judge Gail McKnight and was able to leave the Hamtramck jail that she was transferred to on Monday, August 5. As you can imagine, this sparked great concern in how it relates to DeWan's disappearance. Judge McKnight stated that what DeWanna does in Westland is irrelevant to the DeWan Sims case. In other words, she does not see the connection or refuse to make a connection. She felt that it was apples and oranges. Some argue that this could be the stress of losing her son from the disappearance, or the stress of being involved and having no all in her son's disappearance. From what I can see in my research, Victor actually passed away in 2019, a year before DeWanna. My opinion. The timeline is my biggest concern. I say that because I believe someone close to DeWan is involved, but I can't pinpoint exactly when whatever happened, happened. I don't know if there was a trade-off, some form of exchange, or if there was something far more sinister that happened to DeWan. You know, secrets are hard to keep after decades. When you have multiple people in the mix, something is bound to get out. Rumors or something would typically leak, and that doesn't seem to have happened in this case. This is why I believe whatever happened to DeWan Only a very small group of people know. Two people, or just one. And the truth may have died with that one. It was said that Dawana did not appear to have been abused and that Dawana was a great mom, which makes me believe there may have been some sort of accident that she feared for. I have not seen this discussed much. To analyze this further, something could have happened at home where Dawana consumed something by accident and he succumbed to his injuries. Dawana could have feared that she would be locked up due to negligence of whatever the accident was. Here I am just speculating, trying to make sense of this. It could have been a million of things, we just don't know. What gets me is that she created this elaborate story by lying. Let's just call it what it is. She lied because it's evident based on surveillance footage at the mall and witness accounts. Even if you don't value the witness accounts, because sometimes they can be faulty, but the fact that there is no mall security footage that shows a young boy that fits the description of Dawana and walking alongside an adult, in this case, his mother, Dawana. According to the U.S. Sun, while reviewing the footage with mall security and law enforcement, there was a mother and a young child that was captured on the camera. And Dawana pointed out that that was her and Dawana, but it was not. It was a mother and her young daughter that may have been the same age as Dawana. It was almost as if she was forcing it, trying to attach anything to make it appear as something it was not. The mother and child duo was not Dawana and Dawana. She may or may not have known that. You decide. Why would she lie? The only reason is to create a false scenario. Why create a false scenario? To make something appear that it is not. Why make something appear that it is not? Because you are hiding something. I would think that she would have a fear of serving time, not for whatever happened, but lying on this false scenario. This is why I believe she did not really think this all the way through. Honestly, she may have not known that cameras were even in the mall. I don't know how often she frequented this mall or if this was her first time. She may not have known there were cameras, and that is why she created this story at that location, thinking there would be no digital record of it and it would be written off as an abduction without the opportunity to fact check it. If Dawana was harmed on that day of December 11th, where is his body and clothing? Investigators combed the area, water sources, areas near her apartment building, and even near Beverly's home. I do know that a secret is hard to keep for this amount of time. You would think that something would have come out by now, especially being that Dawana is sadly deceased, and my condolences goes out to her family for their loss. Possibly, something happened with Dawana where she was involved. She kept it to herself, and the truth died with her. That is still on the table, according to law enforcement. Dawana was a person of interest in the case. However, she has maintained her innocence. I want to also mention that throughout this analysis, you will notice that I say Dawana was reported missing instead of the day he had gone missing, which he may not have actually went missing on that day of December 11th. I believe the week that he went missing and everyone she came in contact with should have been investigated, and perhaps they were. This case received coverage, so I can imagine that all elements were looked into. I also would like to know if there was a truth verification exam administered to Dawana, Beverly, Victor, the family friend, and those closest to Dawana. I know Dawana received the polygraph test, which is a form of truth verification, which she failed, but I would like to know if a human professional was brought in to analyze the stress from potential lies on all parties. At the end, Dawana was not charged due to lack of evidence. She passed away, and many believe the truth lies in her final resting place. What we do know is that Dawana wasn't at that mall. I wonder what great lengths her immediate family would go to protect her. Until people start talking. Because it's not too late. A case like this won't be solved. A case so freezing cold. You have to consider, what if Dawana had nothing to do with it, but inserted herself to cover for someone? To me, in law enforcement, that would make her involved for withholding information and simply being an accessory in a crime. The sad part about this case is that Dawana is somewhere out there, and we need answers. God, he was only 4, a baby. This case won't see any light until those closest start talking. There is a possibility that no one else knew. If that is the case, it's true when they say, the truth died with Mom. If you have any information or leads in the disappearance of DeJuan Sims, his current whereabouts, or any information concerning DeJuan, it should be directed to Livonia Police Department at 313-421-1920. The case is still open today. I thank you for your viewership of DeJuan's case. I know someone holds the answers to this 30-year mystery. As always, I ask that you be respectful in the comments and think critically before you comment negatively. Remember, this can happen to any of us, and I'm only doing what I would want done for me, and as you may want done for you. Take care of yourself. Please be safe, be vigilant, and always be aware of your surroundings. May God bless and keep you all.
Tips, but so far, all leads have hit a dead end. TV News' Tamara Eywerts joins us now live from the Livonia Police Department with the latest on the search for DeJuan. Tamara?
Well, Rich, without a doubt, police here are very frustrated. The tip line continues to ring. The tips keep coming in. The detectives are checking them out, but so far they have all been empty leads. In fact, investigators say they still have no proof that DeJuan Sims was ever even at the Wonderland Mall on Sunday, but they keep hoping to hear from somebody who did see him there. This home video shows little DeJuan Sims in happier times. His mom says he disappeared from her side Sunday at the Wonderland Mall.
Be thankful in all circumstances. This is what God wants from you in your life, in union with Christ Jesus. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 18.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.